and this is Changing the Narrative. I'm your host, David Reeves, and we are changing the narrative. We've been spoon-fed a narrative of naturalism, a narrative of atheism, a narrative that says that you are nothing more than star stuff, the result of random chance over 14 billion years of evolution. And again, that narrative is not the truth. We're changing the narrative. We're getting back to real science, to real discoveries. And with me today, I've got Glenn Wilson, a friend who's he actually went on a dinosaur dig, a paleo dig that I led to Kansas a few years ago. But I've gotten to know him so much better. And I want you to meet someone who has become known as the Dirt Doc. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. My pastor calls me the Rock Doc, and I keep reminding him, no, I'm a soil scientist, not a geologist. And there's a big difference.
Tell me just a little bit about yourself.
Well, my doctorate is in soil physics and hydrology.
Okay.
So I've worked as a vitozone hydrologist. That's just hydrology of the unsaturated zone.
Okay.
And we'll talk a little bit about my background today as we talk about this subject.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, so a good mutual friend, Joseph Hubbard, he's actually speaking on stage in the Wonders Theater tonight.
That's right.
I think several hundred people already pre-registered for that. But you've been able to take him to some sites in Tennessee. Y'all have been able to explore sites all over the country. And what we find is that even in our backyard of Tennessee, we're finding fossils. We're finding fossilized plants near coal seams, ferns. We're finding trees still standing upright. But again, when you think about coal and you think about the deposition of all of that, we're talking about plants and things that have decayed, meaning a coal seam is literally this evidence that there was a forest there that got completely compressed.
Yes, that's right.
And yet we see something different nearly everywhere we go within geology.
It's almost
like straight solid lines, one right after the other. Tell me a little bit about this.
That's what we saw driving over here today. You drive on 840 and you just see these beautiful road cuts and just these, you know, knife-like layers, and you see the layer on top of layer on top of layer, and you see them in the Grand Canyon. I know you've been to the Grand Canyon.
Yes. We've had I've had an opportunity to do on-location video at the Grand Canyon, to hike from the very rim all the way to the bottom, and you're right. Everywhere you go, from the very top to the very bottom, nearly every place we see these flat, featureless boundaries where one type of a rock turns into another type of a rock, which turns into another type of a rock, but it's all straight.
And I love watching the old Westerns. You watch those shows, you see on TV, everywhere you see, doesn't matter what country, you see these layers that are laid down by laterally flowing water, one layer on top of the other. But there's some things that you don't see, which is what we want to talk about today.
Absolutely.
So, you know, for years, geologists have said, well, these layers were laid down over millions of years. Mm-hmm. You know, just for an inch, it may take thousands to 100,000 years per inch.
Right. To deposit these things.
To deposit these.
And that's where we're talking about sedimentary rocks, right? Almost the vast majority of rocks that we see around the world today are sedimentary, which means that they were taken up from someplace, deposited someplace else. Now, you can have sedimentary rock through multiple ways, pretty much two predominant ways. One is water deposition. So, in other words, water ripped it up over here and deposited it down over there. Or aeolian, or windblown, right?
That's right.
Where you think sand in a desert, sand blows across the dunes and all of that. But the vast majority of rock layers around the world that we see miles and miles thick are
mile and a half thick on average over across the world. And of course, you know, all this, you know, really changed when Mount St. Helens happened, because there you got what, 60 feet of deposition in just a single event.
Yeah.
And you see these same layers.
You were actually out there researching about 15 years after the eruption.
That's right. A group of soil scientists, I was included in that, 16 years after the eruption, we were looking at these deposits. And there was something that we observed that is missing in all these layers.
Uh-huh.
Let me start off just by holding this up. You know, one of the things with Mount St. Helens is that they were amazed with how fast plants came in.
That's right.
You recognize this. What is this?
Well, it's definitely flowers.
It's
some
a
type
plant.
Of a,
what else on here?
Well, so you've got the leaves, you've got the flowers, and then I see this big root ball here.
Roots. So very rapidly after Mount St. Helens, plants came back in. Well, that one's dead, of course.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's kind of dead and dried up, but that's what plants do, isn't it?
Right. They live and they die.
They live and they die. And what happens when they live and they die? They leave their organic matter on the surface, right? And the roots are taking up nutrients from deep down, and they're bringing it up, and they're mixing the soil.
Okay.
So
there's a word for this.
Yes, it's bioturbation.
Bioturbation. It's a big word, but basically it means that life will stir up the soil wherever life leaves its mark.
That's right. So I got involved and really just now getting involved in creation research. I'm a retired soil physicist.
Okay.
My last, 20 years I did research on soil erosion and sediment transport. Before that, I mostly did work on preferential flow. Preferential flow is just that water finds its paths that it prefers to move down through.
Uh-huh.
Well, those paths are usually biological in origin.
Oh.
Okay. So they're root channels where the roots die.
Okay.
We're going to talk about worms.
Okay.
We're going to talk about ants.
Okay.
So that was what I spent my first 20 years of my career doing, is studying preferential flow. And then the last 20 years, soil erosion, but also soil erosion below ground because of the rapid flow through these biochannels.
So that's interesting. And when you mention preferential flow, in other words, it's going to find the sediment that is easiest to penetrate.
Yes.
Water is always going to find wherever it's
the easiest path.
And that could be where it hasn't fully lithified. That could be where roots have taken, have started to decay or anything. But also, this makes a mark, too. We look at rivers, right?
Yes.
You see rivers are carving down, but they're carving down very, very slowly.
But in the subsurface, water is flowing through. And when it finds these root channels, ant channels, worm channels, or just fractures, you've got aggregates, and between aggregates, it starts flowing very rapidly, and it erodes those. So my specialty was on this subsurface erosion piping to where then the ground ends up collapsing, forming a sinkhole or a gully.
We see this in the Grand Canyon sometimes, where sapping has caused this underground water flow to collapse in an area, and then it falls to the bottom of the canyon.
Yes. So that's what I spent a lot of my career studying. So, I started getting involved in creation research. 2019, I met you.
Yes.
I met John Mackay in Australia. And he said, I'm coming to the States and going to be doing some fossil digs. And so we met him here, and that's when we met you.
Yes.
Well, John asked me an interesting question. He asked me, what was the strongest evidence that I felt like was in support of creation and against evolution? And I told him the thing that was most missing between these layers, and that is soil development. So when we visited Mount St. Helens, now it's supposed to take about 100,000 years to develop 1 inch of soil.
Mm-hmm.
The soil scientists were just amazed. 16 years after Mount St. Helens eruption, there was already clear soil profiles.
Wow.
You're already getting from the leaves falling and the roots channels and those dying back and they're leaving organic matter, you start to develop a soil profile. You're starting to build up an organic layer, topsoil, most people think of.
And we're talking about at Mount St. Helens where everything was just solid ash.
It was ash, and there was no vegetation left.
And environmentalists said, well, there's no way that this is going to regrow anytime soon, but soil development in just a decade.
So with these knife-like features, these lateral layers laid down over millions of years, where's the soil? Why wouldn't it have developed soil if it's laying down these thin layers and they sit there for a long period of time? Where is the soil development? There should have been plants growing, microorganisms growing, organic matter being deposited, and there isn't any.
There's
you don't
not
see
any.
That.
You should be able to see forest growths. You should be able to see hills. You should be able to see river cuts. You should be able to see all of this.
And
in
it's
the rock
all cuts. Missing. And the roots are missing. You know, we see this plant and it's got roots all on it. Well, as they die, they're going to leave channels there. And so when I was at LSU, I used to do root distribution work.
Okay.
One thing I learned from doing root distribution work under different management system is to not do root distribution work. You talk about work. Uh-huh. You're digging it all up and you're excavating it, carrying massive quantities of soil, and then you have to wet sieve it, and then you have to extract the root.
Oh, wow.
I learned I didn't want to do work on root distribution. But one of the things that I had a graduate student doing work on, you know what that is? You might not be able to see that.
What is that, an earthworm? What is it?
That is an earthworm.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I've got a colleague who did a lot of research on earthworms. He was as tall as you, maybe a little taller, and he's got a picture of a worm. He's standing up, holding it up, and it's about 8 feet long.
Oh, wow.
So you can get worms in Africa that's 10 feet long.
Yeah.
We don't have those here, thank God. But... yes, yeah, so we did work on root, you know, on earthworms and earthworm channels. We, you know, would get them to come to the surface and do earthworm counts. And
so you're introducing another component. We've been talking about roots and things, but earthworms leave burrows.
They leave burrows. They leave channels down, and they can go down 20 feet down into the ground, and they will leave these channels there. Do we see those in any of these layers? We don't. The other is something you're probably familiar with, and that is, do you know what this is?
Let's see. Let's see if I can check this out.
Now, I've impregnated it with a solution that makes it hard like a rock, but normally that would just fall apart.
Right. So it has all of these little, is that like an ant for ants? Or
that's
what?
Ant channels. That's
okay.
That's not the mound above the ground, that's down in the ground with all the ant channels.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I brought you something for your museum, didn't I?
You did, which I wish we could bring it in here, but that's a tease for everyone to come to the Wonder Center, because I think it's just over a month from now that exhibit hall will be opening up, and you brought me an ant cast.
That's right. An aluminum cast of the channels going down. Now, those channels also will go down 20 feet into the surface. But that was a small cast, and it was actually, I didn't make it. It was a friend of mine made it for me and gave it to me. He gave me two, and so I gave one to you, because I used to do, I didn't do ant distribution work. Fire ants, that would be a little more difficult. But I did do a lot of dye staining of ant channels, because that's one of the main preferential flow pathways, that water flows through. And then, of course, that can lead to erosion in the subsurface. That can lead to a rapid solute transport, chemical transport through the soil.
And all of these things are important in a number of fields. I mean, whether it's agriculture or whether it's we're trying to develop something, so we want to know. Soil research is extremely important, but no layperson has ever stopped and they're like, well, I wonder if there might be this huge network of ant channels underneath that might compromise the soil. We just don't think of that, but it's true.
Yeah, it is true. And, these things last.
Okay.
They last forever. And we don't realize how many ants are out there. Yeah. You know, they propose that if you took the total weight of all the ants in the world, it weighs more than the total weight of all the people in the world.
Is that right?
And then you look at worms. They're everywhere. ants are on every continent except for Antarctica.
Antarctica? What? No ants in Antarctica.
Well, there might be, but nobody's been out there looking for them, and I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be, yep.
Yes. So they're everywhere. So just as we see these lateral features everywhere, all over the world.
Yeah.
Where's the evidence of there being ant channels?
Right.
Where's the evidence of there being worm channels?
Yeah.
Where's the evidence of there being root channels?
Yeah.
Not just the mixing of these layers, but where's the channels?
It's incredibly rare. I've seen a couple of worm burrows over my days, but they're usually very thin, right?
Yes.
I've seen a couple of clam burrows that have been preserved, but again, they're usually very thin.
Yes.
And then again, you'll have coal seams, which are vegetation, compressed vegetation, but again,
yeah,
there's no evidence of all of this erosion over time.
Or this mixing.
Yeah.
And so as a soil scientist, I just find it totally preposterous that this sediment could just lay there for 1,000 years,
yeah,
much less thousands and millions of years, and not develop soils and not have any evidence of any biological activity.
Wow.
It's just... It's mind-boggling.
It is.
And then, you know, I mentioned, what did I do my last 20 years? I did soil erosion work.
Uh-huh.
A lot of work on gullies.
Okay, okay.
Edge of field gullies.
Okay.
So when you look at those layers in the Grand Canyon, you know, when you drive down I-40,
mm-hmm,
what do you see? Do you see evidence of the gullies?
No.
It's missing.
It's completely missing.
So where is it? Science is making observation.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the scientific evidence for these millions of years of deposition?
We can look at rocks which contain about, you know, 700 million years, supposedly million,
yes,
years of deposition. And you look through hundreds of millions of years of supposed deposition, and you see a flat featureless boundary with another flat featureless boundary,
yes,
with another flat feature. It's almost as if all of these layers must have been catastrophically washed in very quickly,
very
with
quickly,
massive amounts of water.
And one buried rapidly on top of the other. And
okay,
that's the only explanation that supports the scientific evidences, because if it was laid down and laid down there slowly,
yeah,
you would have biological activity,
yeah,
but you'd also have erosion, particularly if you've got a, you know, Grand Canyon that's slowly forming. Well, while it's slowly cutting through,
right,
there would be runoff going to it, and you'd start forming edge of field gullies,
yes,
cutting through these layers and then filling in with sediment. We don't see that.
You know, I just got back from speaking at Jessup University in California, and As I'm going down some of these valleys and see the hills, mm-hmm, on the side, it reminded me, and I saw some waterfalls from some fresh rainfall,
yeah,
coming off of these hills. It's like, well, you know, you can actually see rock falls on the side of the road, talus, where,
yes,
where it's broken off.
Yes.
And then you go to the Grand Canyon, which supposedly formed over 6 million years while the Colorado River,
mm-hmm,
slowly carved away at it. And we see these giant, even horseshoe-shaped canyons
coming off of it,
coming
in,
off of it, but
yes,
completely void of the talus, completely void of,
yes,
the rockfall.
Yeah.
So what would be strong enough to push giant car-sized boulders that had just eroded off of these cliffs,
mm-hmm,
down all the way to, not just to the end of the Grand Canyon, by the way, no, we find the erosion material,
yeah,
from the Grand Canyon out in the Gulf of California.
Yes.
What would it take? It's not the Colorado River. It is something so catastrophic.
Yes.
So let's now back up for a second, and
okay,
I want you to talk about the flood in general and the,
okay,
historical implications of that, because this is kind of where we're getting to. So let's just take a moment, back up, and
yeah,
tell us about this.
Well, I believe it's, you know, clear evidence that it's one big massive event, but of different energies that,
yeah,
that we see. And you see this, these layers are evidence of laterally flowing deposition. But you would have, I just can't imagine it, you know, a year-long flood event of massive deposition, then resuspending,
uh-huh,
eroding some of those layers off, and then redepositing, because you've got God breaking up the fountains of the deep and in location, tsunami stirring it up again. And then even after it's completely covered, you've got gravity forces, tidal forces,
right,
and is circulating and circulating and such. And to me, that's what we see. It would be this laterally flowing deposition, and then it's just all one on top of the other of various energies, various sources of sediment.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just about to say, one of the other things that you would see is that you would see these coal seams forming, but
yes,
you know, coal seams come from swamps, right?
Over several hundred thousand years, where the swamp, you know, just grows, and then the vegetation falls to the ground, and somehow it's just preserved in this swampy substance until finally it compresses a mile of sediment on top of that, and then it turns into coal.
So my colleague Joseph Hubbard, we picked him up 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we picked him up at the airport here in Nashville, came right here.
Yep.
And after we left here, we took him down to the swamps of Louisiana, because my wife's family's Cajun. She's got a brother that lives down in the swamps, and we put him on a mission for us to find some coal.
Coal in Louisiana?
Yes, it's the largest swamp in America. Right, it's bigger than some countries. It's a large swamp. So we went into Chaffalai Basin looking for coal.
Okay.
And you should have seen the faces on the Cajuns as we would ask them about, you know, how much coal have they found?
Right. That's terrific. That is. Okay, so debunking some of these theories that have been taught.
Yes.
For years in university. And yet, we never see them happening in nature today.
We don't see it.
Which means that they're not scientific principles, they're science fiction.
Yes, they're interpretation. They have taken a coal seam and tried to theorize in their minds, how could that have formed? Well, if you read the Bible in Psalms 29, and it talks about how he broke the cedars,
yes,
and how he had them just skipping across, and then you get a picture of it at Mount St. Helens when all these trees were just torn down.
Yes.
And then they sit there and they strip off all their bark, and that bark settles down, and it's got to be rapidly buried on top of that. And that's just what happened with the global flood.
Right. So we have these clues that can be observed, that have been observed. 1980, yes, for instance, you mentioned Mount St. Helens. And then mud flows in 1982 that caused miniature Grand Canyons,
yes,
cutting through these ash layers. And those little clues of small-scale catastrophism point to something much larger.
Much larger.
That produced the exact same features just on a grand scale, including the Grand Canyon, including the miles of sedimentation that we see.
Yeah.
But what it points to is this idea that there was a breaking up of the fountains of the Great Deep, that tremendous amounts of mud, sand, silts, and sediments started washing across the pre-flood continent in tsunami-like waves, laying down layer after layer rapidly,
yes,
of sediment, which then, because it's, number one, it's waterlogged, it weighs a lot, right?
Yes.
And then number two, the more sediment that is piled on top of it begins to compress it all, it pushes the water out, it begins to lithify it.
Yeah.
But it's laying it down in layers,
yeah,
so we see all of the layers, and then people come along several thousand years later, and they say, well, how could we interpret these layers that would kind of kick God out of the picture? In fact, that was the agenda, the written agenda by some of the top geologists of the 1800s.
Yes, Lyell said he wants to remove Moses.
How can we remove Moses from the equation? Let's just kick out God in the Bible, right?
Yes.
So they said, well, we'll just say that each layer must have taken long ages to
form.
All right?
Yeah.
Then again, the point that you brought up is that if each layer took long ages to form, then there would be ages of time for biological life forms to disturb the soil, for roots and plants and trees to grow, which would again completely change the face
and
of the
for
landscape.
Soil profiles to develop, where you start building up an organic layer at the top. You start getting some translocation of the fines, the clays, down to make a clay-rich subsurface. And that was one of the things that most surprised them at Mount St. Helens, was that they were already seeing the translocation of clays, and you were starting to see a buildup of clay layer in the bottom.
Really?
And we don't see that in these layers.
Right.
Where is that in all of these finely graded layers?
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
And Glenn, you've done a lot of research on that. You've been on rafting trips down the Colorado.
That's right.
Correct?
That's right. Went with Canyon Ministries. That was really awesome.
Which is a fantastic opportunity to see geology in a way that very few other places on planet Earth you can see it.
And you see it from a different perspective. I've been to the top of the Grand Canyon, North and South Rim, many times, but it's a different perspective seeing it from down below.
Oh, it certainly is.
Yeah.
It changes your viewpoint, but it really awakens you to the idea that we are sitting on top of, because there's fossils within almost every one of those layers, right? Millions upon millions of fossils, whether it's millions of nautiloids in the Red Wall, or whether it's trilobite trails down at the Tepetes, or whether it's seashells in the Kaibab, whatever it is, we're standing, no matter where we stand on planet Earth, right now we're standing on miles of deposition with dead animals and dead plants that have been preserved, snapped frozen in time in fossils. And those things are all pointing us back to the idea that we have a creator who formed a perfect world.
That's right.
Then we messed it up.
We messed up. That's right.
And as a result of that, he was like, but I still want to have a relationship with you. You know, I still love you.
That's right.
Well, he made a way for that as well, didn't he?
That's what is so awesome. And so I love national parks.
Yeah.
I love the features that we see, but most of our natural parks are really an evidence of God's judgment. You see that even though, you know, we messed up and God does judge and God's going to judge again, he provided a way, and the ark is a good picture of that. And his way is through Jesus Christ.
That's right. Just like there was one door where all of the animals could enter into the ark to be saved, Jesus is the door.
That's
by me,
right.
If any man enter, he shall be saved.
He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father but through me.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. Thank you, Glenn, for being here today and for sharing with us. And we are going to have you back out maybe to introduce the new AntCast and the Wonders of Geology exhibit at the Wonder Center. And thank you for joining us on Changing the Narrative. I'm David Reeves. Until next time, I want to remind you to keep looking up, because truly, the heavens declare the glory of God. Find us on all social platforms to stay informed. Watch Genesis Science Network 24/7 for free on Roku, Fire TV, and on our website. Visit the world's largest origins-based store, creationsuperstore.com. Plan your trip to the Wonders Center and Science Museum just outside of Nashville, Tennessee.